Vermont Businesses for Social Responsibility presents the Vermont Conversation with David Goodman, exploring ideas with innovators, changemakers, business leaders, politicians, and activists. This special feature from Vermont Businesses for Social Responsibility is underwritten in part by the Alchemist Brewery of Waterbury and Stowe, proud B Corp, using the power of business to support a clean environment and economic opportunity for all. Vermont Student Assistance Corporation. VSAC helps students of all ages save, plan, and pay for college and career training with education and career planning services, need-based grants, scholarships, low-cost education loans, and Vermont's official 529 college savings plan. Green Mountain Power, delivering clean, cost-effective, and highly reliable power to customers and offering cutting-edge products and services to reduce costs and carbon. UVM Medical Center, Burlington, Vermont, the heart and science of medicine. Norwich Solar Technologies, providing complete clean energy services to Vermont's schools, towns, nonprofits, and businesses. Concept 2, designers and manufacturers of Concept 2 rowing oars, indoor rower, ski erg, and bike erg, and proud to support nonprofit groups such as the Green Mountain Club. Let's Grow Kids, a statewide campaign about the need for more high-quality, affordable childcare in Vermont to better support our children, families, communities, and economy. And nearly 700 VBSR business members who believe that sustainable business practices value people, planet, and profit. Learn more at www.vbsr.org. Welcome to the Vermont Conversation. I'm David Goodman. Today we spend the hour talking about addiction in Vermont with a family that has personal experience of it. Dawn and Greg Tatro are the owners of G.W. Tatro. It's a family-owned construction company based in Jeffersonville, started over 60 years ago by Greg's father. They are also the parents of Jenna Tatro. Jenna Tatro died on February 15th of an overdose at the family's home in Johnson. She was 26 years old. Now Dawn and Greg are working to fight opioid addiction in Jenna's memory. Greg and Dawn Tatro started Jenna's Promise, a nonprofit organization which is establishing a community-based recovery center to fight addiction. Dawn and Greg Tatro, welcome to the Vermont Conversation.
Thank you.
I wanted to start, Dawn, by just asking you to introduce us to Jenna.
Jenna was she was no different than any other girl growing up. She loved sports and loved the outdoors and enjoyed family vacations we did together. She loved riding horses and just loved life. And she really liked adventure. And when she got out of high school, she decided that her and her best friend Fiona were going on a trip to, they went to India and Germany and Dubai and just all over. And when she got back, then she decided to go to college. And she started her first semester at college, focusing on the medical field. Not sure where her actual it would end up, but she wanted to help people, and she loved it, and she was doing great. She had a 3.8 average, and it was Christmas Eve, and she had been with this particular boyfriend for 3 years, and he was abusive, and he had beaten her up on Christmas Eve.
How long ago was that?
And so that was probably 4 years ago.
6 years ago.
Oh, yeah, 6 years ago. I'm sorry. And she was brought to the emergency room, and she had no broken bones. She had many bruises and a broken heart. And the ER doctor prescribed her 30 days of OxyContin. And that is where our journey began with addiction with Jenna. Jenna had written, actually in her journal, she wrote a lot, that first came the kicks, the bruises, and the sirens. And then that little pill that made everything all better. And I think that was a real eye-opener, reading that in her journal, because That's, I think so many people have had that same experience. Jenna never went back to college, and our lives were never the same. She struggled with addiction for 6 years, off and on, going to many rehabs and trying to find a place that would, you know, she'd get help and then come home and then not have the support here with sober living, or, you know, a places that were willing to take people that were recovering for employment. So it was a battle for her, and her self-esteem was so low anyways, I think, that it was just hard to make her feel like she was going to be okay and be that same person that she used to be.
That idea that, you know, here she was bruised and injured, but the pill made the pain go away. Did she continue in that relationship after that? Did the pill essentially enable her to stay in that abusive relationship?
She, the relationship pretty much ended then, but the, I think that the person would not actually leave her alone, and it haunted her, and she just felt like it was a way for her to escape. And not only was it a way for her to escape, but within a few weeks, she was physically addicted. She couldn't get off it. She was sick. I mean, if...
Talk about that, because I think this is the part that people... it's hard for people to wrap their heads around what happens when you take, you know, one pill like that. What did you see?
Well, a lot of people say they experience is like a warm hug. And once they've taken that pill with, you know, it doesn't happen to everyone, but it's someone that has a this addictive gene and has a depression that with her went along with what had happened. It didn't take long for her to feel that relief and you know, welcome that way to get away from the pain. But for, it's also within 5 or so days, 6 days, you are like, your body wants it. It needs it. And you are physically sick. You are, you know, you'll be the whole like flu symptoms. And I know Jenna had said one time, it's like sawing your arm off with a chainsaw. And because she said it was so painful to come off, to detox off these, you know, opiates. And so your body just requires it, and it keeps telling you, I need more, I need more.
It's physically painful.
Physically painful.
Greg, what did you, well, tell me a little bit about your recollections of Jenna and what kind of person she was. She sounds like a very adventurous young woman and who had a lot of dreams.
Yeah, she was a good kid. I mean, she was on the edge. You know, she liked to ride, like we had a little snowmobile somebody gave us way back when they were little kids, and she'd spend all day on that if she could out there, and she never could keep it half throttle. It always had to be full throttle, and that's, we'd be out there, whoa, slow down, and she would until you turned your back, and then she'd be going crazy fast again. She liked four-wheelers. If we had one in the dooryard, she always wanted to go on them. Skiing was a trip, you know. She just learned to ski, and, you know, next thing you know, she's 300 yards down the hill in front of you, and you're kind of trying to catch up for her to slow her down. So she always had a very brave personality and quite a risk taker. But she was a good kid at heart.
What did you see the OxyContin doing to her? It sounds like this was incredibly fast, the transformation that came over Jenna.
Yeah, you some people out in here listening may know other folks that are having trouble with addiction, and you basically see that person that you knew disappear, because what happens is that drug actually hijacks your brain, And I can remember seeing Jenna sometimes coming in the house, and she'd be aggressive or want things that we weren't willing to give her because we knew she was having an issue. And you'd just, she'd leave and you'd say, who was that person? Because that certainly wasn't my daughter. But that drug, it would totally take over a person's actions and brains, and the craving for that drug is so extreme that they don't have any choice. So it's a real sad thing to watch.
So after the initial period, and this is just 6 years ago, you're saying, how did she find a way to feed her addiction?
Well, she worked a little bit in the beginning, but her addiction went from pills to heroin, we think, pretty quick. And she'd steal from us or anybody she could steal from, basically. We like to call it, now that she's gone, that she borrowed it, but at the time it felt like she was stealing from us, and she'd do whatever she had to do. Towards the end, she was actually what they call a mule here, that the big drug dealers would bring the drugs up here, and then they get girls like Jenna to run it out into the communities, and that's how she was supplying her habit towards the end.
If you're just tuning in, you're listening to the Vermont Conversation. We're talking with Dawn and Greg Tatro about their daughter Jenna, her struggles with addiction, and what they are now doing about it to offer some solutions and relief to others who are addicted. If you want to join this conversation, if you have your own stories of addiction and recovery, or just have your own thoughts on this, you can call us at 244-1777 or toll-free 877-291-8255. Where did Jenna find heroin? How hard is it to get?
Oh, heroin's everywhere. It's in Johnson, it's in Morrisville, it's in Hyde Park, it's in Woolcott. Most of it's coming in from actually gangs from in Lamoille County. I don't know about Chittenden County much, but Lamoille County, it's coming from Springfield, Mass area, Holyoke, gangs on the streets down there can get a bag of heroin for, sell it for $10 down there, and it's worth $20 to $25 up here. So if they have $10,000 worth of drugs there, they bring it here, it's worth $20,000 or $25,000. So
they're, 2 hour drive, they double their money.
They double their money, and they do it sometimes twice a week. So,
how quickly did you realize this had become an addiction?
I'd say within the first year, she went to her first rehab. And you know, we were kind of thinking, well, we got this fixed, you know, she's gone to a rehab for 30 days. And when she comes back, this is going to be all over with. And, it was just the beginning.
What happens in rehab, and what happened to her when she came back?
Well, in rehab, first thing they do is detox people and get them, get the drug out of their system, which can take 5 to 8 or 10 days, depending on how bad a person has been using or how much they've been using. And then they do a lot of therapy, you know, with psychiatrists and other folks that are helping, coaches, recovery coaches. And then after 30 days, they're usually done, and then come home. And the what you find out after a few times is that when they come home, they're going right back into the same environment that they left. So chances of recovery coming into the, going back to the same environment are cut dramatically. We found sober living, a place away from where they are used to using every day, is your best chance of survival.
Dawn, in 2014, Governor Shumlin declared the situation with opioids in Vermont a crisis. He called it an epidemic, and he made national news when he dedicated his entire State of the State address to addiction. Was that a surprise to you at that point? So this is, it sounds like, a year or less into Jenna's struggles.
I think that Greg and I weren't quite aware of what we were dealing with at the time. Mm-hmm. Looking back at, you know, it totally made sense. It was what we were dealing with. It was, you know, but also I think we weren't educated enough. And we just kind of had blinders on and always thought it wasn't that bad and didn't really realize how powerful that drug was and how the pharmaceuticals had pushed it so to, you know, always saying it wasn't addictive. And now all of a sudden, you know, they're saying it is. It's very addictive. And I think it was an eye-opener for us.
What did you think prior to Jenna's experience, what did you think addiction was and how pervasive it was?
I did not understand addiction at all because I had always grown up more around, you know, more people that were alcoholics and it was just, it was a different world. It was, this drug owned you. I know that Jenna would look at me and say, Mom, I can't stand looking at myself in the mirror. I can only imagine what you see when you look at me. And she said, this drug owns me. I hate it. I can't get away from it. It just owns me. And that was such a powerful statement. And, you know, when she said that, I realized that we really, really needed some serious help.
So, Greg, you mentioned that Jenna went into a treatments program within the first year or sooner, perhaps. It was the first of many. So tell us about her journey into and out of and into again and again recovery.
Right. Well, it was, I remember once helping her get on a plane on Christmas Eve in Burlington Airport, and it was to a point where we were just trying to save her life. And you know, you want your children home for Christmas Eve. You don't want to put them on an airplane to go halfway across the country to a recovery center. So it was heart-wrenching. And there, she missed at least three Christmases in during that period of time because she was in some kind of treatment. So it was tough. We had a interventionist come once. He helped us and get her on a plane. And I rode on a Sunday night all the way to California on a plane with her because it's too easy for him to turn around or back out of it. And then stayed like 4 hours and rode a plane way back to Vermont. So it's been terrible, terrible situation.
You called this person an interventionist. What is that?
It's a person who comes in and helps the families get on the same page and then work with you and talk about the reasons you want to save this person who's having trouble. And they're around Vermont, you know. The guy we had came out from Michigan, I think, but they kind of guide you through the process to get the person to recovery centers or make them want to get better.
Why was she traveling across the country to go to recovery?
Right. So she was in here a few times, Valley Vista and the other few, Brattleboro, and there's one or two more in Vermont that are smaller. Basically, they either were full and couldn't get her in, or she'd get kicked out of Valley Vista once or twice and they wouldn't take her back because they, you know, she knew how to get out of there in a couple weeks. So
how?
By smoking, by breaking the rule, by doing something that she knew was going to get her tossed, and she'd do it because her cravings were so strong she couldn't take it. Now that we look back at it, that's what we see.
It sounds like these treatment programs were totally ineffective. Am I wrong?
I would say so. Looking at it for 6 years, well, we lost Jenna in February, so, I mean, I would think effective would be that she'd be sitting here with us. It was kind of a kick in the pants, knowing that you tried so hard to help somebody, but didn't really work.
Hmm. Dawn, what's your take on what treatment did for Jenna?
Well, I think the treatment was, there was always too many, it takes a lot of different support to make treatment work. And, you know, you start with the detox, and then you start with a 30-day treatment just to get their, so they can think and start to make decisions that are based on the right decisions instead of based on drug decisions. And then they need to go into somewhere after that, and whether it be sober living with support and meetings, because it takes at least 6 months for somebody to get their mind back and to start living the way they're supposed to be. And then also employment is a big part. When they come out, they need to have a place that's willing to take them. There's a lot of, they have gaps, some, you know, of 2 years without working, and they try to go get employment, and people really don't want to take a chance on them. The stigma's there. It's like, I'm not going to hire, you know, somebody that's in recovery. It's very heart-wrenching when you see them try get to that point where they're ready, and then to have somebody say, you come back when you get a reference and, you know, you've got some work experience, and instead of believing in that person and thinking, you know, to take a chance on them.
You've described a point recently where she had gone for an interview at a local car dealer, and it had gone really well. But then what happened?
Well, she had gotten out of treatment, and she was just so positive this time. I'm going to make this work. And I said, you know, you really got to have something to feel like you have a purpose. And, you know, I talked her into going for a job interview, and she was just, she had no self-esteem. She just felt like she couldn't do anything. But I talked her into going for an interview at a car salesman place, and she was a great salesman, and she loved cars, and she knew her cars, and I got her in a nice blazer, and she looked beautiful, and she walked in there, and she came out, and she's like, Mom, I nailed that interview. And she says, but when I walked out, I heard someone say, as I walked out, there's no way we're gonna hire her, she's a drug addict. And she says, you know what? I'm never, ever going to get away from that, that what people think of me. And, you know, that took so much out of her that she just, it was hard to get her back to try to go for another interview. And she became depressed. And, you know, but what if that place had taken a chance on her? What if she had done an amazing job? Things could have been different, you know?
What was it like for you as your daughter was going in and out of treatment, and it sounds like fighting as hard as she could to beat this thing?
I did. I fought the battle with her. Sometimes I felt like I fought it harder than her. And it's just, it's heart-wrenching. And what it does to a family is it's the whole family suffers. It's, you watch your loved one go through this, and you're helpless, and you can't do anything.
Hmm. Greg, what was it like for you as you were seeing Jenna and Dawn, you know, this sort of take over your whole family?
Yes, it certainly does take over your whole family. It's like being on the worst roller coaster you could ever imagine in your whole life, because when things are pretty good, you know, you're like, wow, maybe we got a chance here. And then when things go really bad, you're even scared when the phone rings, you know, because you don't know, is this it? Or, you know, is she getting in an accident? Or is she in jail? Or what's going on? So it's, you don't sleep at night. You know, you just don't. You wake up all the time, and any noise or it puts you right on edge. We could have had maybe a little more support for families, which is one of the things that we're going to be trying to help with. But, I wouldn't wish that on my worst enemy. Mm. I really wouldn't.
Okay, well, we're going to take a short break. We're talking with Dawn and Greg Tatro. They are the parents of the late Jenna Tatro, who died of a drug overdose, and have now started Jenna's Promise to help others in addiction and recovery. Stay tuned after the news, and we'll be back with more of About Jenna's Promise.
The Vermont Conversation with David Goodman is brought to you by Vermont Businesses for Social Responsibility and by Vermont Student Assistance Corporation, Green Mountain Power, Concept 2, Norwich Solar Technologies, The Alchemist Brewery, Let's Grow Kids, UVM Medical Center, and nearly 700 business members of Vermont Businesses for Social Responsibility who believe that sustainable business practices value people, planet, and profit.
Welcome back to the Vermont Conversation. I'm David Goodman. We're spending the hour this week talking with Dawn and Greg Tatro. They're the owners of GW Tatro, a construction company based in Jeffersonville, a 60-year-old family-owned company. And lately, they have become the founders of Jenna's Promise. Their daughter, Jenna Tatro, died in February of an overdose in their home at the age of 26. Jenna's Promise is a nonprofit organization which is establishing a community-based recovery center to fight addiction. Dawn, I wonder if you could take us back to February and what happened with Jenna at that point.
Jenna was in New Hampshire at a sober home, and she was doing great. And she called me every day, and she was just so happy that she said she found peace and she just wanted this more than ever, and she wanted to help others. In fact, she would call, and she'd always called, but this time she had called, and there was a girl that she said, "Mom, she wants to get better so bad, and her parents have nothing left. They've put everything they have into helping her, and she just wants to stay for another week or two so she can get her feet on the ground." And she's like, "Would you send money, Mom?" And I said, "Jenna, I can't send money for everybody. I know you want to help everybody, but, you know, we can't help everybody." And she said, "Mom, I'm going to be here for another 9 months. I'm going to commit to 9 months of getting better here." She goes, "But when I leave," she says, we're going to raise money, and we're going to help these people that don't have any money to get the help they need. And we're going to educate people about this disease to break down the stigma." And I said, "Okay, Jenna," I said, "I'm on board." She goes, "We're going to be a great team." And I said, "We are." And she ended up passing in February. That was her promise. We decided I would carry out for her and her father. That's our mission, to help families and help people that are struggling, because she was fortunate enough to have the resources to get the help, but there's so many others that don't.
Was her passing a shock? Was she sort of doing better at that point? And she died in your home, as I understand it.
Yeah, she had made a mistake and left the sober home. And she had decided to go back to sober living. And we were packed to go in the morning to go back to the sober home. And that around 11 that night, Greg, I just remember him hollering, "Call 911. And You know, and I just thought we were leaving at 6 a.m. to go back to recovery again. And then, you know, Greg and I, for 20 minutes, we tried to save her. And little did we know that she had enough fentanyl to kill 7 people instantly. She never had a chance. And it's, you know, it's really tough.
Well, thank you for recounting that story. And, you know, my condolences. It's never easy to tell those stories. And Greg, I wonder if you could pick up the story with Jenna's promise and the where you've taken the meaning that you've made of Jenna's life and death.
Yeah, well, we don't, we kind of thought about this a little bit and thought, well, we can either, you know, run and hide, or we can stand up and tell people what happened and try to help other people. And we thought we'd take the path of, you know, getting out there and helping people and do whatever we can do to turn things around here. Especially public awareness is something that we're working on quite a bit. We're trying to get the word out that folks that are having trouble with addiction can recover and can be a part of our communities and our society again. And we know lots of people that have been severely addicted, and now, you know, a little time later, they're all doing very well. So Jenna's promise, Jenna had a life insurance policy, and of course that came to Don and I, and we took that money and bought the old Catholic church in Johnson, and we call that Jenna's house now, and that is Jenna's house because she paid for it. It's not really the way we wanted her to pay for it, but she did pay for it, and that's where we're going to start doing events and having speakers and, you know, rummage sales and maybe some sober music festivals for people who are recovering. It's hard for folks recovering to go out to listen to music because, you know, there's always alcohol around drugs, not always drugs, but, you know, they're probably available. But alcohol's always there, it seems. And this will be like totally sober so people can come and feel safe. And also, hopefully, people would be okay with bringing their families and their children. So that's part of what we're doing. We've also, our plan is to get things started there. And then we'd like to do some sober living in town for people in recovery, and then get the people stabilized, and then we will go and get them to work. So we actually bought the coffee shop in Johnson here recently, and we're going to refurbish it and get it fixed up nice, and then that'll be the place where most of these people start to work. And then after like 30 days or so, depending on how they're doing, then we've already talked to local business owners that are willing to take a chance. So we have a different program maybe than some do, but we're also like a nonprofit, but we're business owners. So we feel like we can maybe move this along a little quicker. We've had a lot of businesses donate money to our cause because they believe in us. And that puts a little pressure because we've got to succeed, but we're okay with that.
I understand a lot of the materials and building and permitting have all been donated as you've refurbished this church and coffee shop.
That's correct. Ruziano Engineering out of St. Albans donated all their time for the Act 250 permit, and a local company in Morrisville, Silver Ridge Design, helped us with the inside of the church because we got to put some handicap bathrooms in because people that, you know, have trouble getting in and out, we want them to come too. I mean, it's the way it should be in America and in Vermont. So they've helped us quite a bit. Sweeney and Belial, they're going to build the bathroom for us. Rick Whittemore is going to do the plumbing. Larry Wyckoff's going to do the electrical. So it's been amazing. And we also have the corrections department work crew there that's we're fixing all the outside of the building, and that that's all donated labor. We just have to buy the materials. So it's been an amazing show of support.
How does Jenna's experience and the successes and failures that she experienced in treatment inform what you're doing in Johnson?
We figure that the way we think about it is that the 30 days in a treatment facility is the first step for people to get to recovery. The second step has to be a safe place to go to and living for a little while first. So, and I kind of think that was missing in Vermont. There is a company now, Vermont for Recovery Housing, that's doing a lot of it. So I think they're starting to address the issue. But we need places that are safe and have programs so that people get the support after the 30 days. It takes 6 months to a year to get people's brain working normally again. And so I think that was a failure for us and Jenna, that we thought after 30 days everything was fixed, but it really isn't, especially if you go back into the same environment. You're going to have some trouble again.
The employment piece of this sounds very important, sounds like a central part of what you're trying to get them back into normal society. How do you, you mentioned local employers are willing to work with people in recovery there in the Johnson area. I'm curious if in your own business, are there people, you know, you've decided to take on who are in recovery?
Yes, there is. Actually, we just hired a fellow 2 weeks ago, and part of his employment agreement was that he needed to go to the North Central Vermont Recovery Center in Morrisville. And so he gave us permission to check on him, but he's at work and doing well, but he's also on weekends going up to the recovery center to get the support that he needs. They do a good job at the recovery center in Morrisville. They also have some family programs there too that are very helpful to families. And we have a couple other folks that have had some type of addiction issues that are working for us, and they're doing fine. You know, it comes from you. You know, we can help these folks all we want, but it's got to come from them that they have to want to get there. You know, they have to want it, and they have to want to get there, and then our support can help.
Dawn, what has this done for you to put your energy into Jenna's promise?
Well, it certainly gets me up in the morning. As there's, I'm sure, days that I probably wouldn't want to. It's overwhelming, the support that we're getting from the community. You know, we had done an opiate forum, and there were 7 pages of volunteers. People just saying, I will help do anything. I know how to cook. I'll teach cooking classes. I know how to do finances. I'll teach budgeting and gardening and jewelry making and horse therapy. And I mean, it's just unbelievable. Yoga and it's amazing to see the community want to come in and help and make these people feel special and teach them life skills, which so many of them need. And it helps us because, you know, we're like feeling like, you know, they're all holding us up and keeping us going. And it takes an army. And I really believe that we do have an army behind us that's always there just to keep opening another door.
So I know your hope was to begin serving people in recovery this fall. Where are you at now?
Well, we just got our Act 250 permit yesterday.
Congratulations.
Which was a big
That's
one.
That's not a small feat.
So, and we were waiting for that before we could actually do any kind of construction, like with the bathrooms and anything to do with the church. And not that we're going to do a lot of construction. We're going to keep the church the same for meetings and events and speakers. And downstairs, we'll be doing, we'll be making some offices downstairs and also some bathrooms, and handicap bathrooms and stuff. So that's kind of where we're, now we can kind of move forward. And we didn't want to say when we were going to do anything until we knew. And right now our first event will be the rummage sale. We're going to have the annual rummage sale that used to happen at St. John's Church and was always very successful. That will be on October 25th and 26th. And so that should be, even though we're going to be in construction, but we welcome people to come out and see what we're doing.
I understand you've gotten some high-profile endorsers. Governor Scott has stopped by or lent his support, but Senator Cory Booker, who's running for president, the senator from New Jersey, sent a video of support. How did that happen?
Well, my son is very interested in politics, and his wife, actually, and they go to a lot of these events in New Hampshire. Of course, the New Hampshire gets all the presidential candidates
yes.
now. We don't get too many. I wish we did. But
well, if they get lost, make a wrong turn, yeah. they might end up in Vermont.
Well, I heard Joe Biden might have been here a couple weeks ago. So I like Joe, too. It's too bad. But anyway, Gregory was down there talking to him, and he started telling Senator Booker what we were up to, and he's like, oh gosh, I gotta send him a video. I'd love to hear tell him his support and just really good about it. It's pretty impressive. Actually, we're invited to another Cory Booker event tomorrow morning that's for I guess VIPs. I don't know how I qualify for that, but I think it's mostly the Gen of Promise that he wants to hear about. So it's pretty cool. The governor has been very supportive. This is a pretty big issue here, and I think he's looking. A lot of people are looking for somebody to stand up from the private, public side of things and start moving. And the governor has been—he's been right there with us. He actually called us the morning that Jenna passed, and of course I've known Phil for a while because he's in the same business as we are, construction. So, but he definitely cares. He looks at you; you can just tell that his heart's broken too, and that's kind of a good feeling knowing that you get the leader of the state working with you.
So this all has happened to your family at an extraordinary moment when we are learning that the epidemic of opiates in the country did not happen by accident, but was in fact intentional. It was the marketing strategy of the big opioid manufacturers like Purdue Pharma and the family behind them, the Sacklers, and we're learning, and there are now been court judgments in the last few weeks of billions and billions of dollars that they're being forced to pay. And we have also learned that just in Lamoille County, drug manufacturers sold more than 5 million oxycodone and hydrocodone pills to pharmacies in Lamoille County between 2006 and 2012. This is a county with a population of about 25,000 people. What does that make you think?
Well, it makes me think that I don't know if the big pharma knew how big this was going to be and how many lives were going to be lost, but they definitely were pushing drugs. And actually, David Zuckerman came to Jenna's house, and he's pushing hard for, or at least saying he'd like to see those folks serve jail time, and I would too. You can take their money, you get some of it. I'm sure they have it scattered all over and hidden. But, if those people are behind bars, that would suit me just fine because they abused our American people. my daughter might still be alive. And they don't feel that like we do. You know, I'm not going to get to walk my daughter down the aisle. You know, I'm not going to hug her again. So it's just not right.
Yeah. Last year in 2018, we know that 110 Vermonters were the victims of accidental opioid fatalities. And the total number, of course, is much higher than that. When you hear friends go to the hospital, get hurt, and they're offered an opioid as a painkiller, what do you tell them?
We had a friend from New Hampshire who was a big supporter of Jenna's Promise. Son went to the hospital and for an appendix taken out, and we were supposed to meet him that day, and they said, well, we can't come because our son's going in for an operation. And I said to him, I said, do not let them give him any kind of opiates. I said, he'll be fine. Take him home, give him Advil, Tylenol, whatever, but do not let him put him in, you know. And we tell people that all the time. That's where it starts. And so many people, the gentleman that we hired a few weeks ago, he was open about it, and he felt safe with us. He told us his story. And he said, I got hurt when I was 16. He broke his shoulder and got in an accident or something. He said, I've been addicted ever since. So we've heard more people say, oh, my son twisted his knee or broke his wrist or whatever, and they put him on opiates, and it was the beginning of the end. So, you know, it's tough to see. We don't want to see anybody else get addicted to opiates.
And for those who are struggling with addiction, families, what advice do you have for them?
Yeah, if you're a family member of a loved one, go get help yourself. The Recovery Center in Morrisville has groups on Monday nights and Wednesday nights. You can look them up online. It's the North Central Recovery Center. Because if the family gets the help, then you're more able to help the person who's addicted get help. Because people who are addicted are, you know, they lie, they just do anything to get to the next drug. So you have to know what you're dealing with before you can deal with it. So if you're dealing with this, I'm sure in Chittenden County, there's a lot of places, hopefully in Waterbury and Montpelier, but if you're in Lamoille County, Morrisville, there's help for you there. Reach out and get it. The more you learn, the better chance you get to help.
Dawn Tatro, what do you hope Jenna's legacy is to the community, to the world?
Well, I hope that Jenna's promise that she made, that she helps many others that are dealing with this, and that it breaks down the stigma and it educates people that this is a disease. It changes your brain, and people have to be aware of that. And it's we have to treat it without any kind of stigma, and we have to just say we're going to help these people and make a difference, and we can as a community.
And where can people go on the web to learn more about Jenna's Promise?
So Jenna's Promise is jennaspromise.org is a website that we have up, and there's also Jenna's Promise Facebook, which lists events and stuff that are going on to support, you know, stuff that we're trying to do in the church.
Well, Greg and Dawn Tatro, I want to really a heartfelt thank you for telling a really hard story that I hope will help everyone who's heard you tell it.
Yeah, thank you for asking us to come in. We appreciate it. Help us spread the word very much.
Yes.
Greg and Dawn Tatro are the owners of GW Tatro Construction Company and the founders of Jenna's Promise, a nonprofit organization that's establishing a community-based recovery center in Johnson to fight addiction. That does it for this week's Vermont Conversation. And a special thanks today. It is the last Vermont Conversation that is being engineered by the amazing Pitts Quattrone, who has done this for the last 2 years. That means he's done about 100 of these conversations.
Ooh.
And we couldn't have done it without you, Pitts. You've been a great partner riding shotgun with me doing these, and a lot of fun. And I always enjoy listening to your musical choices after I leave the station.
Well, thank you, David. It's my pleasure to be here and work with you.
Okay. So we'll be back next Wednesday at 1, but you can hear this and all shows at VermontConversation.com. I'm David Goodman. Thanks for listening.
The Vermont Conversation with David Goodman. This special feature from Vermont Businesses for Social Responsibility is underwritten in part by Vermont Student Assistance Corporation. VSAC helps students of all ages save, plan, and pay for college and career training with education and career planning services, need-based grants, scholarships, low-cost education loans, and Vermont's official 529 college savings plan. Norwich Solar Technologies, providing complete clean energy services to Vermont schools, towns, nonprofits, and businesses. Green Mountain Power, delivering clean, cost-effective, and highly reliable power to customers and offering cutting-edge products and services to reduce costs and carbon. The Alchemist Brewery of Waterbury and Stowe, proud B Corp, using the power of business to support a clean environment and economic opportunity for all. UVM Medical Center, Burlington, Vermont, the heart and science of medicine. Let's Grow Kids, a statewide campaign about the need for more high-quality, affordable childcare in Vermont to better support our children, families, communities, and economy. Concept 2, designers and manufacturers of Concept 2 rowing oars, indoor rower, ski erg, and bike erg, and proud to support nonprofit groups such as the Green Mountain Club. And nearly 700 business members of Vermont Businesses for Social Responsibility who believe that sustainable business practices value people, planet, and profit.